This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the pod staff. With me today, I have Mr. Pavel Picado. Thank you for being here, Pavel.
Thanks, man. Appreciate
so Pavel is a childhood friend. He now lives in New York City, so we're actually now at the Panerai store in New York City where he sells watches. So Pavel, I'll let you tell us a little bit about yourself. Thank you for allowing us to be here.
Yeah. So I started in the watch industry for sales for a long time ago when I get out of college, and then I started making my way into working for a luxury brand like Panerai. I started back in Dallas though. And just kind of fast forward, we'll talk a little bit about some of the stuff that happened along the way, but eventually I find myself moving to New York City for what I do, which is selling watches.
So what got you into watches?
I've always been into watches.
Yeah.
But mainly it's been part of my family for a very long time. It's just generations of watchmaking, watchmakers mainly, not watch sales per se, but they've been my grandfather, his six brothers, they're all watchmakers. My dad is a watchmaker. My uncle's a watchmaker. I grew up around luxury watches, and always kind of knowing about them. And this is how my family has built what we have now. And if whatever I did in college wasn't going to work for me, it was always going to be watches.
Yeah,
that was always my other choice.
Yeah,
and I was happy with that because I knew a lot about watches just growing up.
Yeah. So before we get too deep into watches, I do just kind of want you to share a little bit about your story from, you know, childhood to, you know, how we met whenever you came over to Texas and things like that, just kind of up towards, you know, going to the college experience where you decided, I want to shift into watches.
So, man, that's funny because we met when we were, what, 12 years old?
Probably.
Sixth grade, middle school. I had first just gotten to the country. My English was not the best. And we actually connected, I felt like me and you connected in through sports.
Right.
So we were playing football together in middle school. And me and you have spent a lot of time. We know a lot of the same people growing up. And then for me, I always stayed in sports as you did. My main focus became soccer. And, you know, even though football was what we were doing before, but I think what eventually that brought me to college, and I got a scholarship to go play soccer for college. And as I was doing that, like, things weren't working out the way I wanted to. I was really sidetracked with different things and, I guess, like, worldly things and stuff like that. So, like, I find myself in a place where, okay, well, this is not working out. This is not something that's going to make me happy. It's not something that is making me happy. So I decided to go for watches. What I knew, I had, like, some conversations with people that I know, like my father and stuff. And then the first thing he did was, like, well, you know, you have knowledge on this, and how about you try to go to school for watchmaking? And I tried that. I went. And I try to do the school, and it takes a specific, special type of person to make watches.
Yeah, to sit there and learn the intricacies and the mechanics and everything like that. Yeah.
I mean, some of the stuff that you see, like you know, you have the pleasure to walk down, you know, the floor over there.
Yeah, this is awesome.
It's a cool place, and we got some cool stuff. And like some of those watches will have like 130 plus 200 pieces just to make, and they're micro pieces. I mean, you need a level of attention and just it's a different game. It's like micro engineering because it's you have to have every part work together just to tell you the time.
Now, how many parts would a watch have if it's just, you know, your standard either Japanese movement or your standard Swiss watch that's probably under, you know, a few thousand dollars?
Man, that's a good question. They could, I mean, they could easily have between 80 to 120 pieces.
Yeah, so probably like double the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you look at a high complication, usually anything that has like a tourbillon or anything like that, that... it needs more parts.
And those are like the Jacob & Co. watches, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got like brands like Jacob & Co. Like most brand, like most major brands will make tourbillons. But like, I will say, like, I probably work in one of the best places that makes tourbillons. Just because our tourbillons just, I mean, when you saw them, right? So like, the whole thing turning like that, like it sits on a multi-axis. And just for you to have that itself, it's complicated enough.
Yeah.
And that's what it is all about, you know, like how much more complicated you can make this. Because, I mean, tourbillons were actually like created a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. It's just that now it's like the race of who can make it the most complicated, but the most like, you know, pleasing to look at. But
is cost, like, is it, are you trying to be, are most companies trying to be the most, or not the most, but like semi-affordable to where it's not like a $500,000 watch? Or is that not, whenever you get into tourbillons, it's just about,
well,
luxury.
That's a little bit above my pay grade, but my opinion is that, you know, most luxury brands at this level, they just want to make the best they can for the client, whatever the cost.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to give them the best. Yeah. So even if that, because of what took for you to do, could cost you so much more than other ways to do it, but you're always trying to make yourself stand out. It's almost like anything, like any product out there. You're trying to stand yourself out. You don't want to run into where you're having the same as other people, you know?
Yeah. So do you pretty much only wear Panerai?
I do. I have other brands that I like to wear sometimes.
Yeah.
But I mainly wear Panerai, not only because I work with Panerai, but also because they just became my favorite watch. It's the reason why I chose them as a brand to get into the business is because I always love the way their design looked and everything like that. So,
I was always kind of like on the fence until I come here and I'm seeing yours and I'm seeing all these other ones and I'm like, huh? Because I kind of like the smaller faces.
I know.
But that one, what is that, 44?
44.
And that one fits my wrist perfectly. So
I know. You got to try it on.
Yeah.
It's like anything. I mean, well, you know, I don't know nowadays. Like one of my things is like I really hate buying things online. I know you kind of have to sometimes because it's just easier. But I'd rather like have the experience with somebody and try things on and go to the store and try things on before I purchase them. I mean, anything. And so like with watches, I say try it on. Try it on before you rule it out.
Because I feel like too with watches, it's a lot about, yes, it's the look. Like you can look online and be like, oh, that's a cool watch, I want to buy that. But I feel like a lot of it is the feel. Because like, you know, I have some watches on that, you know, you could look online and be like, yeah, they're really cool watches. But like when I put them on my wrist, I'm like, I love these watches.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed to feel. That's kind of like what I look for when I'm helping a client. And it's not so much about like making money or like selling the most expensive. A lot of times it's about just finding them like the piece that make them feel like, okay, I love this thing. I love the way it looks.
Yeah.
I love the way I feel wearing it. So then that's the one. And if that one is $30,000 less than the other one he was looking at, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to make that feeling and they feel like they can do that again and again. And then it pays out itself. Like it just, that's how it works.
So paint me like your ideal client. If someone's coming in for a luxury watch.
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to find out about that person in order to be, because, you know, we forgot to mention at the beginning, you know, you're a top salesman, or if not the top salesman, and one of them in this industry for North America, right? Yeah.
So, I do very well.
Yeah.
As of right now, unless the next person beats me, as of right now, I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty up there. But then I think I deal with my ideal customer all the time, because I work for a brand that automatically brings that to you. Mm-hmm. Can some, like, it's like every, it sells. Like, can some people be a little bit more difficult, a little bit harder to work with sometimes? Maybe, but I am that person sometimes when I'm shopping too.
Right.
I think to answer your question, my ideal like guy, my ideal customer, is somebody that wants to learn about the brand and is excited to learn. You know, I like that because I feel like I'm making a difference in somebody else's knowledge. People that come in and usually can afford these pieces, they're businessmen, they've successful, they've done this, done that. They have already a lot of knowledge. And when they come in and you can tell they're getting excited and they're learning and there's like, oh, like I'm teaching this person.
That light bulb's going
on. Yeah, it's like something new that they weren't even thinking.
Right.
Like that's an exciting part for me. So like that's ideal because I feed off of that too. Then I start getting excited. Mm-hmm. You know, I start getting excited. I'm like, okay, like we're both excited now. Like I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's like just being passionate about what you're talking about and selling and everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's cool. So how much of like if someone's coming in and buying a luxury watch, mm-hmm. how much of that, like how many times out of 10 is someone coming in for a milestone versus like, hey, I just want to make a purchase today?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, out of 10, it's hard to tell because a lot of people come in with having a milestone in their mind. But you know what happens a lot of times? You see a lot of people that they say they have a milestone. It's kind of like they're excusing themselves to buy something expensive,
right? Yeah.
Right? So most time, people are celebrating a milestone. A lot of times, after that, people are just here to get a watch they like. They're just here for a watch. Or they've been longtime collectors, so it's just there's something new that they have that a brand has come out and then they wanna get it, you know. And it repeats itself because the sales advisor who's helping him, it's giving him excellent service. They keep that relationship and it's kind of you built on those usually come already knowing you. Mm-hmm. But people that are coming in new, most likely they're gonna like new walk in or something like that. They usually are gonna be milestones.
Yeah,
and that happens a lot. Like, you know, I've done different like people selling their company, which is a huge deal because you know they built out a whole company and then they sell it for a lot of money and then they're like, okay, I want to celebrate with a watch. It's like, let's do it.
Yeah, it's like before it hits the account and you have to now budget for other things. It's like, why don't we take a chunk out?
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
You would?
Yeah, absolutely. If I was getting millions of dollars for a company, I'd probably spend, you know, at least a million on a variety of luxury watches. Yeah. Or maybe one really nice one.
Yeah. So when the podcast does very well, you're going to come and get a watch.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I see one right over there that I think is going to be the one.
Yeah, we'll put it on your wrist.
Yeah. We're going to have to. That might be a picture of this after.
No. Oh, my gosh.
Cool, man. Well, I want to talk about just, like, the industry as a whole. Because mm-hmm. I know one of the main sparks that brought you to me to have interest in this podcast is, like, just making a little bit of a difference in an industry that sometimes gets a bad rap.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like sales car men, like car salesmen, mm-hmm. like sometimes they get a bad rep, and then when you work in a luxury and when you're selling something that most likely people think you don't need it, you know, it is a luxury. There's a lot of just kind of bad representation there sometimes. I think with what I do, I've built stories. I've built just gifts that get passed down through generations. That changes people's, like, could change people's lives, you know. Mm-hmm. There's always a connection, a deeper connection than just a luxury item, and those are just salesmen trying to sell. I've built great relationships in what I do. It's not that I only, and most of my great friends now are they've been clients of mine too. Mm-hmm. So they started as clients, you know, and now they're like friends. We're just
like you
check
go
on
have
me.
Dinner with them or something.
Yeah, and I had one the other day and. He's a great guy. I connected you to him, Scott.
Right.
He called me. He said,
"Scott, if you're listening, hopefully you come on."
He will. I'm sure he will. And I think he called me, And he was like, "Hey, Pavel, how you been, brother? I hope everything's good." I'm like, "Everything's good, Scott. How you doing?" He was like, "Well, my alarm went off today, and it said it's Pavel's birthday. I need to give him a call."
Wow.
And I'm like, "Scott, you really remember my birthday?" He was like, "Yeah, you mentioned it to me that one time we had dinner." And I was like, "Scott, that was the first time we met."
Wow.
You know, so.
Yeah.
And we actually met during my birthday, that day. I was like, we're having dinner. He's like, "Hey," he's getting to know me. And I was like, "Yeah, today's my birthday, so I'm enjoying it with you guys." And he remembered that, and he put it in his phone and just.
Well, and that's nice, because I feel like, you know, you've mentioned him before, and people like that, like very high-level people that the world will consider extremely successful, things like that. And you would think that, you know, even people like that, just on the surface, a lot of times get a bad rap before they're known. Because it's like some people like that, it's just so impressive that, you know, they pay attention to the little details. Yeah. Like, there's times I'll admit I shake someone's hand. I'm like, "Hey, man, how's it going? What's your name?" They tell me their name. I turn around, I forgot their name.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
And it's just like it's a very impressive when you come across people that pay attention to the little details from the jump that.
And that tells you. And that's something that I didn't have when I first started doing what I do. I learned it through them. Because I was realizing that I've made an impact just in a conversation. I made an impact in their life so strong that they remember things, details about me.
Right.
So I started realizing it's like, well, this successful people, they think that, though they feel as this is very important for them. Just taking knowledge of little details of the person you're getting to know.
Right.
Because a lot of times these business people are about making people's lives better too, and they do it through their success. So that's when having a strong relationship is what makes you a great salesman.
And it's probably a lot of times these people that are very successful, you know, financially or in business and stuff, you know, they didn't get that way from not paying attention to details and networking with everyone.
Exactly. There's some that have some memory that, man, I was visiting another client down in Miami, and he was just telling me like a bunch of things that me and him have conversation about like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And if he wouldn't have said anything, I probably wouldn't remember.
Yeah.
And I said, "Man, you have a crazy memory." He said, "So that's what it's about. Like I've made my success because of that too."
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I was around someone like that one time where I was on a President's Club trip, and they were like we were doing these awards, and it was like probably 20 people that they had to remember like their accomplishments on. You would think like PowerPoint slide or like on the phone or something, just off rip. Like it was like doing this podcast, but actually spitting like factual things from the past.
Yeah. Well, I was once in a training where an executive, which is like a high level executive, was came in, and there was like 25 people like lined up, and that person was gonna do a presentation, so she was kind of introducing herself to everybody. But like the first thing she did was she went to every single person, and she said, "What's your name?" Right, and you're like Michael, and she goes like, "Okay, Michael, I really like your eyes, and I really like your shirt," and then she explained. She was like,
"Thank you, bro. I appreciate that."
She would say something like that, and then what she explained is like, "This is the best way I can have, because when I ask somebody for their name, and then I find something out of just visually that I like about them, or that, you know, then I will always remember that person." Mm-hmm. So I always remember Michael. So then when she left, she was like, "Thank you, Michael, with pretty eyes and good and nice shirt." She just went like that.
Yeah, remembered everyone.
And then later on, like 2 days later, we were sitting at a dinner, and she just knew everybody's name.
I wonder if that's learned, or if that is something that like you're inherently like. I know you have to be conscious about it, but dude, I mean, if you put me in a room with 20 people and said, "Name them off at the end of this," there is absolutely no way, no matter how many compliments I gave them.
Well, maybe that's what works for her.
Yeah,
I think that's what high level people do. They find things that work for them,
yeah,
and they just like just exploded. I don't know how to, like, they just utilize it to the best of their ability.
Right.
And everybody has something like that special. You know, it might not be remember everybody's name, but it could be other things.
Is it, who's the most impressive interaction that you've had? It could be a famous person, it could be just a client that you've had.
One time I was able to sell to a walk-in guy. His name is John Hamm.
John Hamm, you said.
But what was impressive about him is that he was like a super cool guy.
Yeah.
Like I have, like, he was a super cool guy. And we go back to the same thing that you were talking about. Like, some people get bad reps, some successful people get bad reps sometimes because, you know, like media and all that stuff. And like, he was just super down earth, cool guy. I mean, he knew what he wanted. And then, like, he just, like, stayed in touch and super cool guy.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, I just had a pleasant experience. But my thing with him was that at first, I didn't recognize him.
And, really?
Yeah.
How come?
I don't know. I was, like...
You just don't watch, like, you didn't watch a lot
of
his stuff?
No, I do. Yeah. And I like some of his stuff. But I didn't recognize him. And I was, like, man, that guy, like, seems so familiar.
Yeah.
And then, like, my team in the back is, like...
Yeah,
so I'm like, oh, okay,
dude, that's awesome.
and then like I just continue, like, if it was like a regular person, maybe he appreciated that, or I don't know. I mean, he's obviously recognizable to most people, but I just enjoy that interaction because I just felt like it was somebody that was being genuine with me. That, you know, they are typically in a spot where maybe that they can't be always, you know.
Well, because everyone's like, hey, can I get a picture? Dude, look, like, they're pointing at you, taking pictures of your stuff. And I feel like for someone that's well-known, it's probably super refreshing to be like, hey, Pavel, looking at this watch. And you're like, cool. What do you need to know about it?
Yeah, you know? It's like, well, what do you name, like, for example, like, in the middle of a conversation. I mean, before, I was like, should I say, like, his full name, John Hamm, like, or should I say John?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't think about that.
Or should I say Mr. Hamm? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, for the sake of this, probably both. But But like, if he was to walk in, he'd be like, hey, John.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, what?
Dude, Mad Men, what a G. Oh, what a G.
Yeah, 100%.
Maybe he'll watch this. Maybe you can send this to him.
I'll send it to him. I'd be like, hey, I'll let everybody know you're really cool.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy. Yeah. But yeah, man, it's been like a crazy roller coaster, because this is a highly competitive business, and just everything that comes into play when you're just selling a luxury item or a watch like this, there's a lot of things you got to think through, and especially if you're the buyer, if you're buying a watch. Or if you're selling a watch, there's a ton of things you need to think through.
Yeah.
And where it comes the best is building good relationships. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and I feel like that can go across brands and sometimes even across industries and stuff like that too. So, and I was interested about, like, just kind of the luxury jewelry industry. You know, you've taught me some of this, and I've heard this from others, to where it's like a lot of this stuff is very... almost sacred feeling, you know. It's like it's like there's things that, you know, you and I have talked about that we are not going to talk about publicly, and, you know, I think that's actually, you know, some people would be interested to know those things, but it is really cool that it's a very, like, it's almost like a large community that feels very tight-knit in what is like a respectful way of going about the industry.
Yeah, and then there is, because if you don't have that, then you lose trust, and people lose trust in you, and then a lot of your business is built in trust.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be, and you have to be genuine and honest. Usually what I've seen is when that's not happening, then everybody quickly finds out.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a tight knit, you know.
Well, I mean, because if you think about the percentage of people that are buying luxury items, you know, $10,000 to $500,000 worth of a piece of jewelry, the percentage in the world is like probably much less than 1%. So I'm sure, but word travels pretty fast if you mess up.
Yeah, that's what happens. So that's like one thing that you always have to be considerate and just try not to be ignorant of what you're saying.
Right.
Not that you can't like share and do things. And I get asked all the time, because one thing I had a big problem with when I was like starting in the industry, it's like when people ask me, or like when I was meeting some of my wife's friends or something like that, or like just people like, hey, what do you do? It's like, I sell watches, but like
without saying the brand.
I would say I work for Panerai, but a lot of times, like, you know, Panerai is such a neat brand that they might not recognize it, you know. It's kind of one of those, like, if you know, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking too, like, because I've known Panerai because I like watches, but you know, when I told some of my friends that I was coming to meet with you and stuff, that are actually like, they're not watch guys, but like people who have watches, like maybe they had a Rolex passed down from a grandfather or something like that, because everyone knows like some of those household names.
Of course.
But I feel like this is a very unique, cool brand, and I think they have something with the Navy SEALs as well.
Yeah, we've done some collaborations with the Navy SEALs.
Yeah, because they're all divers, right?
Yeah, and like the history of the brand really goes to like the, you know, like military, like DNA, and utilitarian watches, and things that you can use, and strong and bold, and you know that's why there's like a nice connection with like the Navy SEALs that we've done for multiple years, and like the Marina Militare, which is like the, you know, Italian Marine. So that's what makes this brand unique. And like a lot of guys that we have a lot of guys that are, you know, they served and everything, and so they come in, they tell their, you know, tell their stories, and like it's cool.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a heartwarming way to sell a watch, is when someone comes in with a story like that.
Well, yeah, and because it's like they deserved it. They've done a great service for everybody, and I think it feels good also those moments, because you know there's people that have worked hard to get to where they are.
Yeah,
and they've gone through some things, and they've put their lives at risk for everybody else to have a nice life.
Yeah.
You know, which it can be really like, I think that's why I think everybody has something special that they can offer, and in business and whatever your everyday life, that's what it's about. And a lot of times, what I really look for too is like people that have like strong faith, because that shows me that there's also faith people out there like making differences and making
there's a lot of times I wouldn't say silent majority, but it can be people who don't like express it out on the streets and stuff like that, but you get to talking with someone and you've come to find that like they have a purpose, a faith-based purpose behind what they're doing,
and values, and they structure a lot of times their businesses and their success around that.
Yeah,
and you see it, and then you see that's why they're successful.
Right,
like you just know.
This episode is sponsored by Dive Fit. Dive Fit is a faith-based clothing brand rooted in Christ and built on consistency, structure, and personal growth. Dive Fit's mission is to help people show up stronger in their faith, their health, and their daily lives. Check out their collection today at dive-fit.printify.me.
I want to continue the conversation on faith, because I know, like we mentioned at the beginning, that was a big reason that Pavel came to me and said, hey, you know, I think that you and I could do some good things and reach some good people and the right people with this podcast and talk about faith in an industry that, you know, you don't hear a lot about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the biggest thing for me is just kind of leaving everything up to God, right? And that's hard already for a lot of people. But I had to learn how to do that, because you can get, especially in this industry, you can get very stressed. Mm-hmm. You can get, you know, chasing numbers, and because it's a business, this is what you do. But at the same time, is that if you don't have something to lean on, something strong like faith, then it destroys you. At least for me, it would have destroyed me.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I was, for a long time, I was running into, I felt like I was running into this, a cycle of getting really stressed out and making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because making mistakes in my life, making mistakes like professionally, making mistakes like silly things that I normally like wouldn't. But when I found myself with stronger faith and in faith, and I lean on that, then it's like kind of like a second breath. Like you're going through stuff, and then you get a second breath, mm-hmm. and it's like I'm gonna be okay.
Yeah.
So why, you know?
Even little things like today, you know, I mentioned to you, I took a red eye to New York City this morning, and I got 4 hours of very crappy sleep.
Oh man!
And I was even just I would just pray to God on the way here because I was tired, obviously.
Yeah.
And I prayed to God on the way here, can you just give me a second wind? And like that's actually like just a very small example of what you're talking about on just like a larger scale for faith and life.
Yeah, I mean that's what keeps me going every morning. I love what I do. I like what I do, but it. Just because you love and you like and you have passion for something, it doesn't always come easy. Mm-hmm. And I think me and you have, also what helped me too, is me and you have, and I really believe this, is that me and you have a strong foundation. Like, just remember when we were, you know, back in middle school and high school playing football, like, there's a lot of people that were bringing faith around us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're praying before games sometimes, and like there was always a lot of that, you know, yeah. Which maybe some people don't have.
I think we were blessed. Like I think back to, and I've actually yeah. talked to him, Nance.
Oh, Nance, yeah.
You know, he brought faith into a lot of the conversations, and you know, I hope to have him on one of these days to talk about his business. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that's just a huge blessing, and it's not even about like converting or you know, a lot of people think like. You know, I'm not ready to take it. It's not about like just changing your life, mm-hmm. I feel like immediately. You're talking about being 11, 12 years old, having seeds planted.
Yeah.
And those seeds have now grown into you bringing faith into your everyday life.
Yeah. And that's it all comes back. You know, yeah. I had a grade I think it was freshman year of high school, and we were playing football, and I think around that time, I don't know if it was whenever you got hurt or, but there was a lot of times where we had, I remember one time the quarterback, we were playing against Grapevine, mm-hmm. and Tyler got like hit really hard.
Kyler,
you remember that?
Yeah, care flighted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, we were like.
Dude, I forgot about that.
You remember?
Yeah.
Man, we were feeling that.
We were all crying, the whole stadium was on their knees praying. Like I just got goosebumps about that.
Me too, because I remember that moment, and I didn't even know what coach it was, because I was with the helmet, and I was like, at the time, you know, I was just wanted to like run through people and like, you know, like because of football and stuff, and like one of the coaches touches me, and he's gonna be like, you know, God is gonna make everything, he's gonna be fine, all you gotta do is win this game. That's what he told me. He's like, God is gonna make it, like, is gonna make it fine,
dude.
And I was crazy. I was like super, like,
yeah,
like ready to go. And but like I remember little things like that just growing up,
yeah.
And how every time I put myself in a bad situation, the only one's been able to get me out, it's God.
Well, and that's why a lot of people will say, dude, like the biggest curse is not having hardship, because like there are people that. They don't really have a lot of hardship. And like that may sound great, and I have mixed feelings on it.
Yeah.
But I have heard it said very recently, mm-hmm. that's the sneakiest way that the enemy gets to you.
Yeah.
Is not having anything get so bad to where you can't handle it yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that way all the time. And I have conversations with my wife, and when I'm coming home from work after having a day where we're like, man, I didn't sell anything, you know. Mm-hmm. The month is coming to an end. I'm getting stressed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, it's like she has sat down with me and say, well, just remember, like, just gotta have faith, everything's gonna be okay. Yeah. And that's my second win, you know?
Right.
If it comes from her, if it comes from my own mind, because of the seeds that has been planted on me, when I was younger, it has made a whole world of a difference to what I do professionally, what I do every day. And that's where I find, like, this, especially like this industry, it's like a silence thing, because a lot of people think this way, and they go in, and especially with the very successful ones, they live like this, and it's kind of like the mindset that people talk about, like speak things into existence, manifest it,
manifesting, yeah,
right, and you manifest it, but when you manifest with faith, then it really happens.
Yeah, because it's not coming from you.
Yeah.
It's almost a plea from you, a humble plea,
yeah,
for God to take care of it, you know?
Yeah, and like staying humble and things like that. And I've done very well, and I get over my head, and I'm doing this. And then, like, then things start getting more difficult. And it's kind of like, okay, remember, you know, you're not, this is not all you.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, that's true.
No, I know, dude. And it's like, it's almost like finding blessings in like the transitions and like the hardships and stuff like that, because I just feel like in the best way possible, God always has a really loud way of knocking you down just enough to where you're like, all right, I need to reset just a little bit.
Yeah,
or maybe a lot.
it's like you, for example. I mean, I don't know if you're okay with me talking about this, but you're making a change. You're doing something different. You're doing something you wanted to do.
Mm.
And it must not be difficult, because you said, listen, I'm not doing this anymore, and I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Right? And then sometimes when you're in that situation, because I've been in that situation, I mean, sometimes I'm like, okay, what should I do? I don't know if I should just do it, if it feels right, if I'm going to do it. But that's where faith comes in play.
Yeah. And that's a tricky thing that you're talking about, too, because it's not... For me, it's never clear as day.
Yeah.
Like, there's maybe been like once or twice where it's clear as day. And I think that that's like literally for me the definition of faith is like trusting, like resting on my laurels to where it's like in my morals and my values and everything, to where it's just like, you know, I feel like at this point in my life to make the recent change in my professional life that I've made to pursue something that I truly have like want to pursue. That wasn't just something that, you know, I've been praying about it for a while.
Yeah.
And that's, it was, the day I decided to do it, which was actually yesterday, was not the day that I woke up and said, thank you, God, you gave me this perfect answer. It was the day that I said, you know what, I have a really strong faith-based feeling about this, so I'm going to pursue it and then rest on the faith.
Yeah. Well, it's like, When you and correct me if I'm wrong, just remember the conversations that we had previous to this, but when you started the podcast, like, you had a vision, right? It has not been easy, right? I mean, you've had to learn throughout, like, your podcast, like, you know, how to do things, and you've had to been like, you've had to come to the point that you've made the decision to change your life professionally, to pursue something that you believe in, you have to have faith.
Right.
Because if you don't, I hate to say it, most likely won't work.
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing about, and two, it's like the motive behind doing it. Because I've said this a number of times, and, you know, I think, you know, some people probably don't believe me, but I didn't, like, I'm starting the other venture. And that's going to be the one that pays me, right?
Yeah.
This one doesn't, and it was never designed to. Like, if it did down the road, great. But, like, you know, it's very humbling to, at first, you know, see the mistakes you make on camera and to see, you know, how you could have navigated something differently and to see all those things that you were asking about earlier.
Yeah.
To where it's like, I just think that as soon as you can just say, I'm putting myself out there and taking the step, it doesn't matter if you are the worst at it. Like, I know I'm not up there with the best of them in a lot of things that I do in life.
No,
but I'm putting myself out there in a lot of those things because I want to pursue, you know, I want to pursue.
That's like a good humble faith is what gets me going and gets people going. And I see it with clients too. It's not always shout out loud, which I wish it did. It was, right? Like, I've closed a big sale, and like the first thing I wanted to say to my boss was like, we're celebrating, we're happy, it's good business, it's good for everybody. First thing I wanted to say to her was like, it's all because of him. And I did, and I told her, it's all because of him. And she said, yes, it is.
Wow, was that surprising to hear back?
No, because I know she is. Okay. So yeah. She's good people.
Okay,
and
yeah.
I know she's.
Is that's surprising to hear back in this industry, though?
Typically, I would say.
Yeah.
Yes. Everything is just, in most businesses, everything is just about business and making things happen. But I was happy to hear it, and I felt like I felt one, not alone, and in this industry.
Yeah.
And I felt like that's, like I said, that's what it's about. You know, and me and my colleagues have conversations all the time, and it's always like nutrition, because you learn things from everybody, and clients learn things from me, even if they've built three successful businesses, and they're really up there and you know in class and everything, and they've gone through the best schools and everything, and often they are willing to listen, learn. And especially if they're in faith and you know they believe and stuff, and they're even willing to talk about it if the door opens. Mm. So when I see I can, I open the door.
Yeah, yeah, and that's awesome, because a lot of people, like even people with faith, like I feel like there's having faith and then there's being willing to open the door on faith.
Exactly.
Because that's where the scary part comes at times, because you're wondering, you know, you have to then decide how important is my belief and my faith,
yeah,
and how important is what's in front of me of potentially, you know, upsetting someone or potentially, you know, rubbing someone the wrong way.
Exactly. And you don't want to do that, because you know you also have a responsibility with a business.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of tape around sometimes, a little like tiptoeing sometimes. But when I get through that, like when I open the door and it just comes right through, and it's pure, like it's just pure, nutritious for your soul.
Yeah.
And then that also sometimes comes as your second wind, because sometimes you are so involved in what you're doing that you forget, and somebody comes in and says, you happen to open the conversation, that door in that moment, and that's your second win. They say something that you're like, I've been looking at this whole day.
Yeah.
I've been looking at it wrong.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know if there has been times where you have kind of kicked yourself after a conversation because you were like, man, I could have opened that door, but I didn't want to risk it.
All the time. Happens all the time. Because I believe that, and this is one of the things that me and you talked, and I wanted, part of why I wanted to do this is not to show, oh, I'm like really good at what I do, because it's really to have this conversation and mm-hmm. talk about faith.
Well,
I feel like it's our duty to open that door to everybody.
Yeah, and I think it's important to actually note, though, that like you are incredibly successful with what you do, which is why it's so important as well to talk about faith, I feel like, too, because a lot of times people think that there's one or the other. A lot of times people see like faith and Christianity, or you know, just faith in general, as just this, you have to stay poor, you have to, you know, it's all peaceful, it's all just kumbaya,
yeah.
And that's just not really, I mean, I'm sure it can be like that in some circles, but for me, sometimes my faith makes me want to run through a wall in the best way possible to break down some barriers and go pursue something, and it's very motivating and liberating, like listening to a rap song or something.
I agree, that's what, you know, and just going back at a professional level, that's what gets me going. Just pure faith. I like, do I enjoy the money, or do I enjoy the success that I get? I do. right? But I do especially when I know it's because of faith. Mm-hmm. And when it's not, or when I didn't put faith first and good things do still happen, doesn't feel as good. When even maybe a smaller thing happened, a smaller change or a smaller success happens, but I know it's with faith, like I enjoy those way more.
Yeah.
A lot of times. And
because they're lasting.
Yeah. And those, I talk about them all the time. And that's what I go for. And at a personal level, it's been the thing that has me going. I told you about my son. He was born with a heart condition. He was born in Costa Rica. At that moment, I was waiting for my wife and my family's like papers to come through together so I can bring him over with me. And it was hard because I had to travel once a month to go see them. And just coming home, like the other day, a client asked me, like, how'd you feel at that, like when you were going through that? Because like, he's like, I can't see myself not coming home to my family. Like, I understand that. Yeah. Like,
when you told me that, I was like, man.
Yeah, and it's like, it's okay, a work trip for like a week and then you come back, but you come back home and your kids are there. Like, a lot of times what I was going through is like, I would come home every day for 4 years and they were not there. I couldn't hug them. I couldn't like give them like the love I wanted to give them. I couldn't plant it. I didn't have chance to plant seeds like I wanted to plant seeds on my kids, especially with faith, which now I'm grateful because I am able to do it every day.
I met them today. They seem like wonderful kids.
Yeah, so they're cool kids. Man. But my son, he was born with a heart condition, one that was so difficult that he just didn't have full oxygen, and they needed to do an open heart surgery. And Costa Rica happened to be the only hospital in Central America that has the machine to do that. But there's a long list. And the more time he spends without oxygen, the most dangerous it is. Mm-hmm. Or at least with the amount of oxygen that we need. So for the whole thing was already so just, I didn't know where to turn. Because at that point I thought my faith was strong. And then I realized it's not strong enough. Because why is this happening, right? So I remember having great conversations with clients, even through this while this was happening. And a lot of my closest clients are worried, they cared. And then Juan went so far that like helped, like he extended a hand to be like, what can I do? You know? But that was when I found my faith. Was I was sitting there crying with my wife about the whole thing. We couldn't figure it out. How can we fix this? And then we prayed, and then my I don't know if I mentioned to you this, but my mom pulled me aside, and my mom said, "What's going on with you? You've always been the guy in our family that claims about faith and says, you just gotta put everything in his hands." I said, man, that's true. That I prayed and then things just started, like, also, my good friend, he made a couple calls. A team of doctors from the U.S. through a foundation flew to Costa Rica and was taking care of the most critical surgeries. And my son was one of them. So they got him right through, right on my birthday.
Yeah, and you said the chances of that actually happening through regular avenues was like impossible.
It was impossible.
Yeah.
And we were just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then I told my wife, I was like, everything's going to be okay. I know. That's my faith. And then we went to see the doctor, and they break down what they do with the surgery, and they tell me we'll hook him up to the machine to stop his heart, but keep him alive. Mm-hmm. And that was scary. I was like, yeah. Whoa. Like, it's a little baby. I mean, he's, at that point, he was like 3 months old.
Yeah.
Like, I was worried. I was, And then the guy who was explaining everything, he said, the doctors came in, they looked at his heart, and they're like, we don't know what you believe in, but it is a true miracle that he's alive. Because the only reason he's alive is because the side of his heart that's pumping the right amount of blood with oxygen has a hole that shouldn't be there. And two things, that hole is the thing that has kept him alive. If he didn't have that hole, that imperfection in his heart, he would have born. He would come to birth. The moment he would come out, he would have been dead.
Wow.
And then that hole is perfect for us to move the vein that puts the oxygen on that side of the heart, so it can work like a normal heart. It's a corrective thing. He's gonna be 100% a normal, like a normal heart, normal kid, normal person after the surgery. And there's no science to explain how this happened. There's no, like, it's truly just a miracle. And that's when I was like, man. Like, for me, it was like, okay.
Yeah, that's, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
It's like, whenever you told it, you know, a version of it to me the first time, I was like, I felt that lump in my throat of like, wow, this is, like, God is amazing, amazing.
There's no other explanation.
Yeah.
I mean, wasn't my faith, or it was just, like, people say to me, like, oh, God has a plan for your kid.
Mm-hmm.
God has a plan for this. I just know it was him.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful.
Yeah.
And I made a promise too when I was praying that day, like, even before I even talked to the guy, I was like, I will, as the head of the house, like in my house, like, I will make sure that my kids, my wife, my family grew up knowing that it's all because of you.
Yeah.
And that's my promise.
Yeah.
I just gotta keep doing it.
Dude.
It's hard sometimes. There's a lot of distractions out there.
Yeah.
It's not as easy as I thought, but when I made that promise, I know I did it with so much faith. I have to follow through.
Yeah.
And part of this is to share that you gotta open the door for as many people as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna ask you at the end what you would say to that person struggling, but I think that is the perfect thing to say. I really do. You've got to open the door.
You got to open the door, man. If you don't learn, you don't get to know, you don't build relationships, and you're blocking yourself from encountering more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
And we should always want more and more and more, because He has more and more and more to give. You know, that's my personal touch. That's what goes through my mind.
Yeah.
When I think back on my life and my stuff and things I've done.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Pavel. I think that's a wonderful way to end it. You know, the goal of this is always, just as a reminder to anyone listening till the end, is that this would, you know, maybe not reach the masses, maybe it does, but that it would reach the right people that God wanted to hear this. So thank you, Pavel. Thank you
course,
so much,
man.
For
anytime.
Coming on the show and inviting me up to New York City and showing me around. But
now I got to show you a little bit of New York.
Yeah, we're about to go out on the town.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, course, thank you, man. So much.
Anytime.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.